Information presented in the following program is for entertainment purposes only and should not be taken as a statement of fact. It can certainly be said that most cities, most states, can boast of having great radio at one time. But if you lived in this area from 1960s to the 1990s, you know that South Florida was king of radio. This is a tale of the greatest radio from South Florida. Welcome to Tales from South Florida. I'm your host, Bill Monte. If, like me, you grew up in South Florida in the 1960s, 1970s, 80s, 90s, and you listened to radio, and let's face it, who didn't back then? Getting on your bike, you're taking your transistor radio, hanging it from the handlebars, and turning it to the coolest AM or FM station around that you could listen to. That was living in South Florida. Hey, we didn't have phones, we didn't have beepers, we didn't have everything that you have now. We were outside playing, but we wanted to take that music with us. Whether we were on our bikes, we were laying out in the backyards on lawn chairs, or we were at the beach or at the pool, music was always playing. It was so essential to our lives. One of the kings of radio back in the day, his name was Rick Shaw. I know, it wasn't really his name. What his real name was, is it really important? Because Rick Shaw was the voice of cool in the 1960s. Music was changing then. The Beatles had made it all new. The old pop sounds from the 50s and early 60s were starting to go away. The artists who dominated those charts now moved up into adult pop, if you will. So Johnny Mathis and Frankie Avalon and people like that. If you wanted to hear the music that was beginning to change the world, you were listening to WQAM. Now, back in the 1960s, if I recall correctly, FM was not a thing yet. It was AM. It was WQAM, WFUN, WINZ, maybe WIOD. I remember my mom, I think, listened to WINZ. She used to like to listen to Mike Ranieri in the morning. And Mike would do a little light talk and banter, try to make you laugh, and a lot of Sinatra and Dean Martin and Connie Francis and songs like that. But for me and my brother and all the kids we hung out with, we wanted to listen to Robbie Young, Charlie Murdoch, Lee Sherwood, and Rick Shaw on WQAM. I remember meeting Rick Shaw once, so there was a tour of Elvis Presley's Gold Cadillac. And it was outside of the Hollywood Cinema on Young Circle in downtown Hollywood. It was hosted by, my father used to work for the Melville Corporation, which at that time was basically Tom McCann's shoes. And Tom McCann had some kind of tie-in with this, so we got to go with my dad down to see Elvis's Cadillac, which was way cool. We got to meet Rick Shaw. He had on that hat that he always wore. I don't know what you call it, like a little sailor, kind of Dutch sailor cap thing. He wore it back then. He wore it his entire career here in South Florida. I remember shaking his hand and thinking he had the world's largest hands. Of course, I was about 8 years old or 9 years old, so everyone's hands were the world's largest. And he was so nice, and he signed autographs. There was a postcard of Elvis, a picture of Elvis Presley standing next to the Cadillac, and he signed that for us. He was such a gracious man. Rick Shaw was king of the oldies for as long as I can remember. His career went from WQAM to Waxy to Magic. All of them, as they kind of turned into oldie stations, they would start playing the music of the 50s and 60s. He kind of followed that trend. If you were having that kind of an event where that music was played, then you had to have Rick Shaw there. He would go to like high school reunions. He would go to high school proms. They were playing that music. He would show up and do it. That was the kind of guy he was. Never heard anyone say a bad word about Rick Shaw. And he just epitomized WQAM, the music that they played there, and how important all of that music actually was to us. The 70s came along, and Rick Shaw kind of lost some of his cool. One thing that I do remember about Rick Shaw was years later, as an adult, and we would go to a restaurant called Regis Steakhouse. It's in Plantation, in the Fountains. It's now a Smoky Bones. But at the time, it was Regis Steakhouse. And he must have loved this place because it seemed like every time we went, he would be there. And he would wait just like everybody else did outside the little patio area, wait for your table. And people would come up and ask to take pictures with him, to get his autograph. And even then, he was still so gracious and so nice. So one of the really good guys. But as the 1960s moved into the 1970s, radio started changing. Something called FM was now starting to dominate radio. AM was kind of staying more of the oldies style and going more into sports. Certainly down here in South Florida, it was becoming more Hispanic-based. That was the early stages of it. But you started going over to FM, and that's where the music was. And again, everyone I knew, and for me, this is all we listened to, was WSHE. She's Rock and Roll. Sonny Fox in the Morning. I don't even remember some of the other people. I can tell you a guy named Tom Webb was a DJ there. Nice guy, and I'll tell you how I know about him and my connection to WSHE in just a moment. But she was really, it became the hot rock and roll station in South Florida. All of the concerts out at Pirates World, out at the Sportatorium, the Orange Bowl, wherever it might be, she was behind it all. Had a strong signal, much like WQAM. I remember WQAM. Their signal, was, they said, went as far south as the Bahamas and Cuba. And I remember taking trips, you could listen to it north of Orlando, and you'd still get it. She was much the same way. Taking trips to Orlando, go to Disney, you could listen to she most of the way. Definitely a little bit north of Fort Pierce anyway. And you loved it because they played the best rock and roll. Everyone who had a car, they were sporting a WSHE bumper sticker on their bumpers and on their fenders. People were wearing the t-shirts everywhere. It was the station to listen to. Now, there was other great radio stations at the time. Certainly Magic, I mentioned before, which was playing the oldies. You had Love 94, which was kind of the smooth jazz station, or soft rock it became, what they now call yacht rock. Certainly Y100 was the other huge player. That was more disco-oriented, more pop-oriented than anything else. But for me and my friends, it was WSHE. So I'll tell you my quick connection with it. Around 1976, they had a contest, all right? And the top prize was cool, but the second prize was a Marantz stereo system. I really wanted that Marantz stereo system. It was the greatest. Everyone wanted one then. I certainly couldn't afford to buy one. So in conjunction with Specs record stores, everyone remembers Specs? Raise your hand, right? Who loves Specs? And Playboy magazine and WSHE, I entered that contest. Well, I didn't win, friends. Isn't that sad? I didn't get the Marantz stereo system. I didn't win second prize. I won first prize. First prize was a one-week trip touring with the band Kiss. I know, right? So we went on. I took my brother with me. He was a huge Kiss fan. I was not so much a Kiss fan. But, you know, we won the trip. We're going to go. We went to Indianapolis. We went to Louisville and ended in New York City with a concert at Madison Square Garden. And our chaperone from WSHE was a man named Tom Webb. And Tom, he was so great. I don't believe he was really thrilled about having to chaperone us as we went up there. It was kind of his job, kind of his duty. He had asked us if we'd ever been to New York before, and I said, no, we hadn't. It's our first trip. I'll never forget his advice. He was like, well, don't really walk on Times Square a lot by yourself at night. And one thing, if you decide you would like to spend some time with a lady of the evening, he didn't quite use those words, just remember, they don't like to be kissed. So don't try to kiss them. This was the farthest thing from our minds, by the way. But yeah, that was Tom Webb, WSHE. So that's my connection. Yeah, we went. And I'll even put up on our Facebook page, Tales of South Florida Facebook page, if I can find it. There is a picture of young Bill Monty and his brother with the rock group Kiss. And this was back in the day, remember, when Kiss still had their makeup on. No one knew what they looked like without their makeup. We were able to see them at a private party on the first or second night of the touring with them, in which they came in and we saw them without the makeup. I can tell you that everything you think about them, that you know about them now, is absolutely true. Paul Stanley was very nice, very gracious, and Gene Simmons was wild and funny, and the other two were kind of standoffish and really didn't care much to meet with their fans. But anyway, so it was WSHE that got me that, and Specs Music and Specs Record Stores. So that's a blast from the past. Now we move into the 80s and the 90s and the evolution from music to talk radio. And we'll be right back. My friend Cirque du Soleil Echo Under the Big Top is coming to Gulfstream Park February 22nd to April 21st, 2024. A spectacular performance combining poetry, stagecraft, daring acrobatics, and technology. This show explores the delicate balance between people, animals, and the world we all share. We're giving away a pair of tickets. All you need to do to be entered is to write me at talesfromsouthflorida@gmail.com and say, I want to go to the Cirque, talesfromsouthflorida@gmail.com. We've also got special discounts. How does 25% off sound? Sounds pretty good to me. Special discounts for Tales from South Florida listeners. Again, just write to me at talesfromsouthflorida@gmail.com. I'll send you the information. And now, back to the show. As the 1980s rolled into view, so did country music. Country music became really big in the 80s. We saw 99.9 Kiss FM rise up to prominence. Chili cook-offs out west at Markham Park and at C.B. Smith Park also started rising with country stars playing. Certainly Willie Nelson, Dolly Parton, Kenny Rogers, Waylon Jennings, all of those country singers became stars during that time. WQAM even switched from rock or pop and sports that they were doing at the time also to being a country station. But there was something else happening in radio back around that time, and that was the advent of talk radio. There was a man named Alan Burke. He'd been pretty popular in the 60s and 70s, a caustic, some would say very right-wing, pre-Rush Limbaugh type of person. He was on talk radio late at night, and people, either you loved him or you hated him, but you did listen to him. He was part of what was starting to become a trend in talk radio at the time. Certainly there had been for a long time a man named Paul Harvey. If you don't remember, Paul Harvey used to be added on as a syndicated portion of a radio show, and he would tell little stories. He would tell stories about people. He had a unique way of delivering lines. I remember everything was page two, page three. And now, the rest of the story. I used to love listening to Paul Harvey. I had a job in the early 80s where I drove a lot. So I was listening to radio all the time back then. And if there was a station that had Paul Harvey, I was there. I made sure I was listening around the time that would play. It would either be at the top of the hour or at the bottom of the hour, the last 5 minutes or so. But it was about at this time in the 1980s that talk radio was about to change. And for a while, it would become dominant radio for most listeners. A lot of talk radio at the time, like Paul Harvey, like Alan Burke, was syndicated radio. Sort of like podcasts. Back then, everyone had a syndicated radio show. But there was one man who started coming on to the scene in South Florida who would radically change how we viewed South Florida. I would go so far as to say that he literally lifted it to an art where others had to copy. And others came along that did. His good friend Norm Kent came along and started a radio show. Steve Kane, sort of like the poor man's Alan Burke, certainly came along. So many others did that started their own kind of network, friends of Steve Kane's. But this guy, he kind of took on the world at times. And I'm trying to think, what was his name?
Neil Young.
Oh, yeah. That was him. Neil Rogers. Neil Rogers.
Absolutely correct, sir.
Was born Nelson Roger Behelfer. Hope I got that last name right. In Rochester, New York. He often talked about Rochester. And until his retirement in 2009, the Neil Rogers Show was consistently the top-rated show in the Miami-Fort Lauderdale media market and had been since his Miami debut back in 1976. When he was growing up, Neil used to amuse himself by announcing his own play-by-play while watching baseball on TV, and years later, That dream would come true when he announced play-by-play for the Miami Hurricanes baseball team in 1978 to 1982 on the radio and in 1983 for television. His first radio job was at WBTA in Batavia, New York, and he was headed to Yuma, Arizona, when he received a call from his mother, from Mommy, learned that Miami-Fort Lauderdale's WKAT radio had offered him a job without application or audition. Neil turned his car around and headed for Miami. It debuted in 1976, and from there, the sky was the limit for Neil at that point in time. About 9 months after he did that, an alleged singer and former Miss America or Miss Florida, Miss Annoying, whatever she was, named Anita Bryant, began a crusade to repeal Dade County's ordinance banning discrimination against homosexuals. Neil responded by announcing on the air that he was a homosexual. This was in 1976. It might be hard for some of you who weren't around then to know or remember. This is a real act of bravery. Neil could have lost his job with this one announcement. That's how strong feelings against homosexuals were back in the day. Bryant's campaign to repeal the ordinance was successful, but Rogers' admission did nothing to hurt his radio career. Indeed, his ratings increased with every Arbitron rating period from that point on. He would move on to other radio stations. He moved to, at one point, up to Nashville and did not return to Miami until 1980 on WNWS News 790 AM. He was unrivaled at that time as the highest-rated talk show host in Miami, dominating the 18 to 24 demographic and the 25 to 54 demographic, which, by the way, is the most coveted age range in Arbitron ratings. So if you were a radio personality, you wanted to be number one there. He was an unabashed liberal. He was funny. He was self-deprecating. He could be right out direct, and some would say mean, when dealing with callers. He took on the establishment, most of the time radio station owners, directly on the air, calling them cheats, thieves. If there was a problem at work, he would talk about it openly. He hid nothing. And if he mentioned a restaurant, it would go through the roof. People would go there just to see if he would be there or to be able to call and tell him, Neil, I went there and you were right, it was this, or you were wrong, I didn't like it. He moved to WINZ in 1984, but it was when he moved to WIOD in 1988 that Neil Rogers really took a hold of Miami talk shows on the radio, and he set the bar so high. At that time, they started building lineups around him. So on weekdays, you'd have Neil in the morning. Neil wakes you up in the morning. And then you would have Rick and Suds, Rick Riley and Suds Coleman. Rest in peace, Suds. Good show.
I know how to do a talk show.
You would have the great Phil Hendry. You'd have Randy Rhodes. And then at night would be Jim Mandich or Hank Goldberg talking about sports. And the shows would cross over. You had WFTL, Steve Kane and his crew doing their thing. They would come over. They would all talk about each other. It really was like, you know, you think Marvel has this connected universe. This was a radio talk show connected universe, unlike anything we'd ever seen or heard before. Neil kept it up for many, many years. Eventually, he had enough clout to actually take his show up to, I believe he lived in Quebec in Canada, but he would do most of his shows from up there, remote. He was being considered for a spot on the Howard Stern Sirius XM radio station when he became ill. Howard has actually talked about trying to get Neil to come over there.
Cock-a-loon.
And he later passed away and came back to Fort Lauderdale, South Florida area, and he passed away from complications from diabetes.
He died?
You can still hear Neil if you're not aware of this. He has a podcast. I want to thank, I believe, Barry Rose. Hope I'm saying the right person here. Has taken a compilation of all of Neil's shows, so you can actually listen to the Neil Rogers Show, rebroadcast of all those shows, or you can even get some sound bites. And just to take you back to that time, let's listen to a couple of them.
Thanks for calling.
He's an agent provocateur.
Give me $15, I'll put in a word for you with the Lord.
You call this big market radio?
Loan me $50.
Neil Rogers.
God.
There are so many great Neil Rogers stories, it's hard to tell them all in this short amount of time. Maybe we'll do a part two just about Neil God. Needless to say that my brief stint in radio back in the late 90s with Jeff Wolfe, I wanted to be Neil Rogers. I wanted to do that kind of thing. What I found out real quick was he couldn't be duplicated. He was one of a kind. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Tales from South Florida. I look forward to speaking with you again real soon. And remember, be kind whenever possible. And it's always possible.
I'm dying over here. Happy Purim!
No more sucking, please.